Welcome back to another episode of the Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we review and break down films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
Okay, I want to just, I'm wearing this hat because of the movie we're talking about.
That's a good, yeah, that's a good one.
Listen, I have a lot of these hats because of the Republican character that I play on my social media. And I buy these hats at Mavericks when I'm on the road. A collection of these. But I just want people to know that, like, this is not my actual, this is a character that I play. And this is, I have the military hat. Nice. We are talking about The Long Walk, a new movie that's in, I think it's still lingering in theaters.
It only came out like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think 4 maybe. But yeah.
We've already done our spoiler-free version of this on the channel. Kramer did it by himself because I wasn't feeling great last week. And so check that out if you want the spoiler-free edition. But we're going to be talking spoilers in this episode. So if that's a problem for you, go watch the other one. It's linked in the description. Yep. Go check that out for the spoiler-free. But this one is spoiler time.
Yes.
As you said in your spoiler-free review, you liked this movie, yeah?
I did. I liked it a lot. It was very, very well done, and it was very emotional. And every part that they wanted to have affect me, it really affected me. And it was sad. It was scary. It was very, very jarring. But yeah, I really enjoyed this film. What I mean, did you like it? What are your
very
thoughts?
Very effective, very simple concept and simple, you know, and sometimes something like that can actually be really difficult to pull off, where it's just like it's just characters talking and moments that need to land in a specific way. I would say if this film has any weakness, it would be the screenplay by J.T. Molnar. I think sometimes is a little just, I don't know what the word is. It's a little like simple. It's a little pedestrian in the themes that it's trying to deliver. It's a little just sort of like direct, like characters just sort of say very directly the thing that they're trying to convey. Right. And what makes the movie work, in my opinion, is the performances. I think the actors do a good job with the dialogue. And I think that overall, the moments that need to hit. Yes. And like you said, it is very emotional. And so when the movie wants you to feel a certain way about an event that's happening, you feel it. And but I was thinking about that. I was thinking, I think, like, for a movie that's so dialogue heavy and that's just characters having conversations, I could have done with a little bit more, I don't know. And maybe it's just because I've been watching so much Paul Thomas Anderson recently, but like something a little bit more poetic. I don't know, something a little bit more, more subtle, you know. I don't know.
Well, and when we get to the end, I totally know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
there were some things that I was like, you know, you could kind of put it was almost a little, it's not on the nose, but it was a little too direct, and it's like you could leave some of this up to interpretation a little bit more. But like then it was kind of just like it just kind of stuck to the point. And it didn't leave as much open to interpretation or anything like that. So it was kind of, And like I said, the ending, I'm still wondering if it could have been different and maybe a little bit better.
Yeah. I wonder about that too. And but again, like the cast is doing a really nice job here. I think that the thing looks good. It's as simple of a concept as it is, it's mostly quite well executed.
Yeah.
And again, like I felt the emotions I'm supposed to feel when I was supposed to feel them for the most part. And I think it's just, it really is like, we're going to be talking about one battle after another tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And I've been watching just a lot of Paul Thomas Anderson lately. And I'm always just amazed at how he's able to convey so much of what a character is feeling or so much of like what, like something about the human experience with like one line that is so simple yet it's. And I just think, I don't know, like it's a skill that very few writers have.
Yeah.
And I can't really fault J.T. Molnar for that because the script works, you know,
it does
what it needs to do.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's get right into it. So we know the premise for this movie. You talked about it in the spoiler free, but it's just like, we start the movie off, and I think there's it's a letter that is informing our main character that he's been selected in the lottery for the long walk.
Yeah.
And so he's due to report at this location at, 0600 hours or whatever it is on such and such date. And he shows up. His mom, played by Judy Greer, is dropping him off. And our main character, played by Cooper Hoffman, is being dropped off to start the long walk. And
yeah,
I did kind of like how, just in case you didn't see any trailers for this or you went into the movie blind, I like that they decide to not fully tell the audience what exactly the walk fully is or entails.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's definitely like a very like YA novel, premise, and maybe the original, as you said, spoiler free of this concept of like the Hunger Games or, Allegiant or,
It does seem to be kind of the OG one or something. I mean, maybe there was something before that, but yeah, kind of everybody's and like I said, that the thing I like about this one is they're pitted against each other, but they're not trying to hurt each other. And I think that's what I got. Like in the Hunger Games, they're trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
Whereas this, they're trying to just like, they get killed, but they're trying. And I love the theme of like the brotherhood that they develop because of this.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty strong from the start. I just thought it was a way to make this movie more interesting.
Yeah. The movie's paced quite well. I mean, we get right into it, right? Judy Greer drops her son off and we can tell this is a very emotional goodbye. Because I mean, it's a 1 in 50 shot that her son's going to survive this thing. And those aren't great odds, There's 50. There's 50 young men who are going to go on the long walk, and one of them is going to be standing at the end. Mm-hmm. And her son's not like in the best shape,
No.
Yeah, I mean, not to say anything about Cooper Hoffman's not like in terrible shape, but
no.
But I mean, that's the thing that at the very beginning of this movie, we get introduced to a lot of the characters. Obviously, there's not really time in the film for us to get to know all 50 of the young men super well. There's some we get to know better than others, but pretty early on, we get a look at like this one kind of blonde guy who looks like he's the fittest of the boys.
Yeah.
And there's something that they do with him later on that I want to that I didn't really.
Okay.
I didn't like the twist with him. I thought he was saying it was something else, and then I thought it could have been more interesting. He's kind of like everyone's biggest competition. But they're all sort of like preparing their backpacks and tying their shoes and making sure that they're ready to go. And Mark Wahlberg shows up as the major.
Yeah, Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill.
I was gonna say, whoa, what movie were you watching?
Can you imagine if it was Mark Wahlberg?
That would be a very different movie.
Yes. All right, let's go.
Say hi to your mom for me.
Gonna do the long walk. Yeah. Hey, don't eyeball me. Okay.
Yeah.
Don't look at me like that.
The funny thing is, he would probably actually be a pretty interesting major.
Yeah.
He would, because I think about him in The Departed and how good of a character he was when he's just like mad all the time and like really assertive. I think you'd have to do it differently for him. It would be a very, very different movie with Mark Wahlberg, that's for sure.
I like it being an old guy,
It needs to be an old guy,
Like, speaking of The Departed, like Alec Baldwin could have done this too.
He would have been interesting,
And
like I said in the spoiler free, I really like Mark Hamill, I think he did a really good job, but I do wonder if someone else like Alec Baldwin could have brought something a little bit more to it.
Well, the movie we're going to talk about tomorrow night, One Battle After Another, has a very similar character done by Sean Penn, and I think Sean Penn's performance is likely to get him nominated for a Best Supporting Actor.
Pretty crazy.
Sean Penn's awesome in that movie.
So he was you love to hate him, and he did a great job.
And he could basically be the exact same guy in this movie as the major, and it would work. With the same name too.
Exactly. But I mean, what did you think of Mark Hamill?
I like Mark Hamill in this. Here's my thing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people just have a really nostalgic connection to Mark Hamill for the very obvious reasons. And I think he had such a like disappearance from Hollywood for so long
I
think we always just get happy when we see him in anything, whenever, at least I do, whenever he pops up in anything, I'm like, oh good, right. Mark Hamill's here. You know, like, it's just, I feel bad in a way for actors like Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher, and like Harrison Ford is kind of the only one who made it out of those movies and was able to have a career beyond that, and was able to create several other iconic characters. But those actors have just sort of, I mean, they spent the rest of their lives in the shadows of those characters.
Yeah.
So anytime I saw them get to have an opportunity to do something else, I'd be excited. All that being said, it's not like he's bad in the film.
I agree.
It's just like, I don't know. It's just the whole movie, I'm kind of going like, it's Mark Hamill. It's Mark Hamill doing like a gruff voice and being like, hey,
You know? So we feel the exact same. Yeah. But I mean, he did, like you said, he didn't do a bad job. He was good.
Yeah.
He's good in this movie. And he's a presence the entire movie, whether he's there or not. So.
Yeah, David Johnson is very good in this movie. We meet him early on. All the boys are just sort of getting to know each other early on, kind of feeling each other out, like, who's my biggest competition? Who's a person who maybe I could be friends with and talk to while we're on this walk? I will say this about David Johnson's performance. He's getting a lot of well-deserved praise. He's a very charismatic and watchable actor. I will say my ear sometimes just... There's certain British English actors that, like, I just don't feel like they're quite pulling off the swing that they're a few years ago, I watched The Wire for the first time, and I just don't feel like Idris Elba ever quite fully pulls off the Baltimore accent the way that he wants to, and the way that the show needs him to. And I'm constantly just going like, I can just hear Idris Elba's like British accent underneath this character all the time. And I just have to sort of like, try to not pay attention to it, and try to not. And I can also hear it with the other lead of The Wire, Dominic, whatever. Not Dominic West, but
I know who you're talking about. Yeah,
he's the guy from like the Forgotten or the, you know. I can't remember.
I forgot what his name is too. Yeah.
But there's a little bit of that going on with David Johnson's things, because I also think like, English accent to Southern accent is a really tough transition, because there's still like soft R's in an American Southern accent.
Yeah.
And there's, so him doing, going from an English accent to an American Southern accent, sometimes the accent's a little hard for my ear to pick up on things that he was saying. I was kind of like, I don't know. He's living in between these two accents that are weirdly similar, but specifically different. And it's making some of what he's saying a little bit hard for me to grab, but he's still a very magnetic presence.
Yeah. Yeah. I caught that a few times. I was like, oh, that's a little much. It's a little much, but he's way better than some Americans who try to do British accents.
So, oh, sure.
Like, I was able to forgive him for it, but yeah, he's a great, I mean, immediately, you know, him and Ray, who's the main character played by Cooper Hoffman, they meet immediately. He leaves Judy Greer, who is amazing in this movie, in like three scenes.
Uh-huh.
And he meets David Johnson. And so immediately they're there. And I was always kind of like, I was kind of suspicious of David Johnson most of the time, because I mean, they are pitted against each other. So I was kind of like, oh, is this guy for real? Or is he just trying like a tactic to kind of help himself? And I think the movie wanted you to think that. And
well, this is another thing about like the screenplay from J.T. Mulner is I think that he could have done more with some of these other characters.
Yeah, I agree.
Having people like, plot against. I just felt like there would be things that would be set up, and mostly I would just say the tone of this movie is just like sad. It's just bleak. It's just sort of. You talked about in the spoiler-free review of this movie being a metaphor for war,
right?
Which I definitely think it is, but I really came away from it going like, I think The Long Walk is a metaphor for life.
Yeah. Yeah.
That it's just sort of this unforgiving thing that's like, there is no finish line, and you just walk until you're not walking anymore. And some people get out really early, and it's not fair. and it's not, and some people take themselves out and some,
yeah.
But like another thing that happens in life is some people take each other out and
yeah.
take, you know, and I was, I just kind of thought, I felt like they could have brought some of that in there. They set some pieces up and then wound, like particularly the character Markovich, who they sort of set up as the villain of the walking group. And then his story, the end of his arc, and I don't necessarily have a problem with this, but the end of his arc is that he's just like, he just kind of gets really softened by the walk and just like really sad that nobody likes him.
Yeah.
And takes himself out in a really brutal and sad way. You know?
I mean, well, yeah, he stabs himself with a spoon.
Right.
Which I agree though. I was like, okay, this Barkovich character really needs to
Yeah.
He really needs to like, he said like, oh, I've got something for you. He
says
that to Ray. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. What is it that he's doing? What is his plan? Cause he takes out pretty early on. He's talking to another character and he's talking about his mom in a very vulgar way. Mm-hmm. And the character tries to hit him and he moves out of the way and he falls. And I was like, well, that's a part of his plan, but it did seem to affect him really, really.
Yeah. Almost immediately. He was like, I didn't mean to do that, but I was like, oh, I think it would maybe be more interesting if he did, because it felt like he did. But also there's something but I'm also interested and compelled by this idea of like, the way that people sometimes are their own worst enemies, that they'll posture as being like really tough and like, I don't care. And I'm not, you know, and it's a defense mechanism. And once more and more people are dying around him and he's sort of softened by the brutality of the walk, he's just like, can I just be friends with you guys for the last, you know, little while that I'm here? Would you guys please just like be cool with me? Like, I didn't mean to kill that kid. I didn't, you know?
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, or thinking about people who like go to prison for murder or something like that and get softened in prison by like the reality of the consequences of their actions and just want people to like see them as human after that. And it's just like, I know I did a bad thing, but it would really mean a lot to me if you could see me as more than just a person who did this bad thing.
And
you know,
I agree with you. I do like that. I wish that it was a little bit, I wish he was changed a little bit because he was put forth as the antagonist. And the one who is scheming to do all that. So like, you can still have him be his own worst enemy, but I think they went a little too hard because that made me think the whole time, well, this is all part of his plan.
Well, so, and this is again, the screenplay thing where I'm like, I think that if the direction you want to go with this character is it's a red herring to think of him as a villain. He's just a scared kid who was acting like an idiot. He's just a scared, insecure kid. Then I think you need to do more with his arc before he dies to sort of make I think you need to convert us into people who feel bad for him.
Yes.
But by the time, you know, that we're actually like, this kid's really trying to make amends, you know?
Yeah.
And
And I agree. I think they could have done it differently to make us think it's not all part of his plan. Cause when he did kill himself and when he did, when he did that to himself, I was like, okay, I didn't know how to feel about it.
Right.
I didn't feel as bad for him as I could have.
Well, at that point in the movie, we've watched so many of these kids die and we're very clearly just rooting for Ray and Pete at that point. And we're just sort of like, well, okay, I guess that's one more down, you know, and Berkovich was a jerk anyway. So, you know, and I feel like it is sad. Like the movie is just heavy, but, so, you know, I mean, going back, like all these kids are getting ready for the walk. They're meeting each other. They're making connections. Some people are cold with each other and some people are kind of making like fast friends. There is this funny kid that I wondered if they did this intentionally because there was something about the design of this one character. I can't remember his name. Was it Tony or
is he the one who wants to write a book?
No, he's the one who's got a wife.
His name is Hank Olson.
There was something about like, maybe this is me just being a little bit racist, but he just reminded me of Ki-Hui Kwan in as Short Round or as the kid from The Goonies, because this is sort of a period piece and it feels like it's set in like an alternate 1960s or 1970s. Yeah. The way this kid was dressed and like his hat, he just felt like that character kind of
see that. Yeah.
You know, but like a more grown up version of that character, like a more, Like if the character from Data grew up and was, you know, like 19 or 20 years old.
Right.
Yeah. But I like this character a lot. Yeah. I think he's really funny and adds a lot of like much needed levity to the movie. One of the characters that they meet right off the bat is a kid who looks like he's maybe 15. And I think there is a requirement that you need to be 18 to be in the Long Walk, kind of like military service. And they're like, how old are you, kid?
Yeah.
And he's like 18. And they're like, come on. And he's like,
yeah.
Okay, I'm 17. But like, you know, and they're like, all right, whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the kid from Jojo Rabbit.
That's right.
He's the first one. You could tell like, and you immediately are like, oh man, like,
yeah,
not going to end well for this kid.
Yeah. But the major shows up and he explains the rules to all the kids. And he basically just says like, you know, this is the Long Walk. You guys know what it is. It's a nationwide lottery that basically like it's an alternate America that had a kind of economic collapse after maybe World War II. And instead of the boom that America experienced, they had a massive collapse. And to stimulate the economy every year, they have this lottery where one kid from every state goes and participates in the Long Walk. And it's supposed to be this big event that kind of encourages people to get back to work and to work hard.
Yeah.
And he explains to them the rules, which is you all have a sensor, a wristband that you wear, and it has a, you know, device that makes sure you're walking at 3 miles per hour. And there is no finish line. And if you go below 3 miles per hour, you get a warning. And you get, if you get more than three warnings, you get your ticket. And you can, if you have three warnings, you can get that erased if you go, what is it, 3 hours without
an hour. Each hour gets erased a warning. Yeah.
That's right. So yeah, every hour that you go without a warning, you can erase a warning. Yeah. So you can, you know, potentially over the course of the Long Walk, get like 20, 30, 40 warnings, as long as you're erasing them by walking another hour for 3 minutes. Yeah. And those are kind of just like the rules of the movie. Other rules are like, you can't walk off the road. If you walk off the road, which, you know, and this brings up all kinds of complications. Like, what do you do when you need to go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
What do you, you know, what do you do to eat? What do you do to sleep? You know, all of these things. And it's just like, there are no breaks. You have to keep walking at 3 miles per hour. And very early on, you know, we have a scene like once the walk starts and we have a scene where one of the guys, I think it's the guy who's like really fit, his shoelace is untied and he stops and he's trying to tie his shoelace and he's getting warnings. And it's kind of like the first moment, like we in the audience have not been told what getting your ticket is yet.
Yeah.
But as he's getting warnings, all the guys are turning around and screaming at him like, just who cares about like tie it later, you know, and like, get up. And he's got his third warning. He gets his third warning and a soldier walks up and points a gun at his head. Mm-hmm. And that's when, if you haven't seen the trailer or haven't read the book, that's the first moment you realize, oh, getting your ticket means they kill you.
Yeah.
And you also just tell from the performance of the other guys that, you know, and you in the audience immediately feel it like, dude, it's not that important that your shoe's untied. And also, we just started. How did your shoe come untied? Like, you know, but they filmed this movie in sequence.
Yes.
Because they wanted the actors to kind of wear down physically over the course of the shoot. And if you think about it, it's like most of the scenes in this, like this movie, for a movie that's just a bunch of guys on a road walking and talking, you would think that they would sort of inject it with a lot of flashbacks to their various lives before the Long Walk.
Right.
They only do that like once or twice in the entire movie.
Yeah.
And the rest of the film is just them on this road. And which means that when they were shooting this, they were doing, you know, full days, you know, a full, a 12-hour work day. And most of the setups were the actors walking and walking quite briskly and like long takes of them doing dialogue while walking. So that means that like they're walking, you know, probably 8 hours out of a 12-hour day.
Oh, yeah.
And after doing that for whatever, it's probably a 2 to 3 week long shoot, even though they're not walking as much as their characters are walking, they're definitely showing up to work like, oh my gosh, another day of, you know.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty brilliant that they decided to do this because, I mean, it turned out really well. But yeah, in one of the behind the scenes things that I watched, that one of the actors was like, yes, we had to walk a lot. He's like, but you know who else had to walk a lot? All the crew.
Oh.
And he was like, every time we had to walk back. So the crew was walking back. So the makeup people, the gaffers, the cinematographer, everybody is walking. So he's like, it was nice. He was giving a shout out to the crew because they all had to walk that much. Like,
well, and you know, I mean, when I was doing the Horizon films, my storyline was a wagon train. And so we were like a bunch of, you know, prospecting pioneers moving across the plains. Mm-hmm. And we had several days where all we were shooting that day is like masters and inserts of the wagon train moving across like a giant field. And it would be a full day where, and like my character, like my job is to wrangle cattle and stuff. Yeah. And so I would just spend the entire day on a horse wrangling cattle. And it would be all day long of just like going down a field, you know, and just like moving with these cattle and keeping them in line and keeping them with the wagon train. And then we call cut after like a 3 or 4 minute long take, and we turn around and we move the entire wagon train back to the beginning point and we do it again. Yeah. And it's like, and that many people, we'd have like 250 people, you know, like, and, you know, 100 head of cattle and oxen and donkeys that are pulling these wagons and stuff. And we've got to turn them all around, get them, you know, and it's like, it's a insane. Big, you can spend an entire day just being like, we're just moving across this field all day long. Yeah. And and it's a lot of, you know, though I would end those days and I'd be like, I'm not an actor today. I'm literally just a cowboy, just wrangling cattle, you know?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, with Horizon and with this movie, it really shows the professionalism of filmmaking. And like, I mean, that's a lot that goes into it. And all the cows and everything that you had in yours, they all had to have an animal wrangler for them, you know? So if you have different oxen, you got to have different. Anyway, it's a huge production, and even though this was a simple film, there was a ton of people that worked on it.
The fact that they've got to have like a moving video village that's always behind the camera setup team, and that they've got to like everybody's got to be there so that when they stop and reset, makeup people have to be. They can't be like waiting somewhere, because this film, like usually what the camera is seeing is very wide. And so we're seeing like the sides of the road and everything, which means like everyone that in the crew that's moving along with the camera, they've got to be moving all of their stuff. So if they've got chairs for the actors, if they've got actor holding, they've got to be moving that with the team, because they can't hide it in the background, because a lot of times we're seeing everything. So, you know,
I didn't find this out, but I would love to know. I wonder if they just had like, you know, trailers and everything that were driving with them so they could, I don't know. This is a very interesting production, but everybody was walking and, but I mean, back to the movie pretty quickly, the kid who says he's 18,
Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah. Jojo Rabbit kid. He gets a cramp and he starts cramping pretty bad.
And this is probably like what, mile 2 or 3, like it's not that long. Yeah, and he gets a cramp and he's freaking out. He's like really scared about his cramp. Yeah. And all the other boys are like, it's okay. Just like, if you keep walking, it'll go away. Like, just push through the pain, you know? But
he ultimately doesn't. And they come up, he gets his final warning. And then, I mean, this was, he gets his ticket, and he gets his ticket very graphically.
But he's screaming, it's not fair. It's not fair. And this is like when, you know, the audience, like the movie really tells you like, yeah, we're doing it like that. Because when that first sort of like pointing the gun at the kid who's trying to tie his shoe happens, you're like, how much are they going to like really lean into the violence of this concept?
Yeah.
And then in this first kill, this kid who's the youngest kid, the most helpless kid who can't walk because his leg is tightening up and he just can't move. And he's just screaming and crying and saying, it's not fair. It's not fair. And they just blow half of his face off. Like and then the title card hits and it's like, that's when it's like, okay, that's what we're watching. That's what, that's what the stakes are. Yeah.
I mean, when the title card comes up, I mean, I felt like, well, that's the first act, which was very like, whoa. Like, it really set everything up right there. And it was really graphic, but it really set the tone. So I don't know.
Yeah. And then it's interesting the way that the movie plays with, like, okay, we've got 50 people to get rid of by the end of this film. Are they all just going to be people who get a cramp or people who, like, roll their ankle, you know? But there's all these different ways throughout the film that people, like, one guy, it's, again, this movie is like, it doesn't shy away from the struggles of what the long walk really entails, because there's one guy who's kind of friends with our main kind of crew of guys who's trying to go to the bathroom, and he's just pooping while he's walking, but it's slowing him down, and he's getting warnings because he keeps stopping and crouching to like finish pooping. And they're like, just poop there. And they're all just like, just go in your pants. Like, just, you know, but he's like, I can't, you know? And every time someone's doing something like this, you're just going like, dude, just get up. Oh my gosh. Like, you don't, you can't, you know, but it shows the brutality of like what they're being put through. Yeah. And I can't remember if that kid gets his ticket or if he narrowly escapes the first one
he has like diarrhea, like he's sick, and he cannot stop going, and he ultimately gets his ticket. And then one of the other characters he has to do that, and it's basically at the last second he pulls up his pants and he goes, and they're like, dude, why couldn't you just, like, and then they're like, you gotta go away because you stink, which is gross, and they get into all those details, which I thought it was good that they did that, because if you didn't show any of that, like, how do they go to the bathroom, how do they, you know, that becomes a very interesting and even a point of tension within the movie. So
yeah, and it is interesting to see, because you're also thinking like, well, how much are they each allowed to bring in their backpack, and like, how much food could a person carry, or how much water? And it is nice to see, like, some of the rules of the walk are like, you are allowed to have as much water as you want. You have a canteen, and when your canteen is empty, you just call, I need a new canteen. Yeah. And the jeeps that sort of ride alongside them will refill your canteen. I think you get a daily ration of food, and the food is like, it comes in these like tubes. It's just like protein paste that comes in these tubes. But basically it's like, if you aren't smart about your daily ration, then that's on you. There's not unlimited food that you can have, so you got to kind of be smart about when you choose to eat your food, and, you know, one thing that the movie does is it always kind of sets up new sequences by showing us what mile marker we're on.
Yeah.
And you can tell that these guys are feeling it after like mile, like 7, 8, or like after like mile 10, people are like really, and it's like, you like walking 10 miles is no joke.
Yeah.
And but then like by mile like 20-25, people are like getting delirious and you know, and starting to be like oh my gosh, my whole body is it, you know. And I don't know, like I kept thinking about when I used to work as a server, and I would always check my steps at the end of a shift, you know, because when you're a server, you're just on your feet running around a restaurant all night long. And you're just, and so it's like, even like in an 8-hour shift of just running around a restaurant, I would get done some nights and be like, oh, I walked 12 miles tonight, you know? And I'd be like, okay, that's why my legs would be like so sore at the end of the day. And it's like, 25 miles is crazy.
You know? Like, well, yeah. And it seems like because the first night is really hard for them. Mm-hmm. And because they're falling asleep while they're walking, and like things are hard. But I imagined after, like you talked about it, you know, walking 20 miles is really hard for anybody. But then I think they just kind of get used to it, and they just keep walking. But I did think that because I think the first night where they have to walk up the hill.
I can't remember if it's the first night or the second night, but that's a night where a lot of people get their ticket, and it's like, it's a clever device for the movie to just, and I think it's up the hill in the rain too.
It is.
And so it starts to rain on them, and they hit an incline, and it's like a long incline. And the major basically just says like, a lot of you guys aren't going to make it up this hill because it's like, you're already so, and this is after they've been walking 30 to 40 miles already.
Yeah.
And now they have to walk like a full mile up this incline. I mean, this sequence is like the hell of war, where like these guys are just, they're helping each other like make it up this hill, and guys are just dropping right and left, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, the nice part about this, you know, this was the part that I realized that David Johnson's character was for real, because he gets in an argument with Ray, and Ray's like, well, you know, whatever, like, you just want one less person to, you know, to, mm-hmm. to have to fight against, you know? And so, and then he gets his third warning. Ray gets his third warning, and he is walking up the hill with a gun pointed at the back of his head right. the entire time, which was like, I was like, oh my gosh, like this is, and he's almost at the top of the hill. And then David Johnson comes up and puts his arm around him and is like, I got you. Like, just keep going. Let's keep going. You know, let's help each other. And I thought that was such a great way to show like, okay, David Johnson is not trying to, he's not trying to fake anyone out. Like he is, cause he's been the one who's like, he's kind of happy and he's like, we got to stick together. And like other people are questioning his, you know, intentions, but that's when you really find out that he is not doing anything. Like he really is a nice person trying to help yeah. all these people out. And I actually wanted to ask you about, cause right before this, you know, they're talking about, oh, do you have a girlfriend and all that? And like, I got the feeling, and I've seen this a little bit online, I got the feeling that David Johnson's character might be gay.
Oh, I got that feeling.
Okay, you got that too. And
I got that feeling.
He kind of gives Ray a look, and I just thought it was really interesting that they decided, and they never say it, which I was glad.
Yeah.
They kind of just leave it at that. And I thought it was a very interesting aspect, but even I also felt like he could have been gay, but this relationship that Ray and David Johnson's character has is definitely a platonic love, like a platonic brotherly yeah. love between these two characters. I thought it was just so well done. That part of the movie was so well done. And I just kind of loved David Johnson's character after that because of how authentic yeah. he seemed. But anyway, yeah. I just thought that was a very interesting part of the movie. I'm glad to see that you thought that
but the movie never says it, but I picked up on that. And who knows if that's correct yeah. or not, but he's also got like a big scar on his face, and at some point yes. they're all kind of telling stories about their lives and you know things and yeah. and kind of sharing secrets, and somebody asks him like, all right, why don't you tell us about the scar on your face, and he doesn't want to talk, and it's like the one thing that he's not really, because he's a very like optimistic yeah. guy, he's yeah. a very positive guy, but it's the one thing that he's like, you know, let's talk about something else, you know. But yeah, it's interesting the way that these guys decide, even in this incredibly bleak, incredibly dire situation, we might as well try to make the most of it by like spending yeah. our last moments alive, you know, forming friendships, because like, why not? You know, if we're all yeah. going to die here anyway, we might as well like yeah. try to have a good time with each other, try to hang, you know, make some memories, yeah. have some moments that yeah. matter. Help each other as much as we can. And that's one of the things that makes the movie work, makes the movie yes. so emotional, is yeah. every time someone gets their ticket, most of these guys really feel it. It's not like they a do. Thing.
Yeah.
It's not like this like cynical thing where they're like excited that like, that's one less competitor, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. they're like at least our main characters. And it seems like most of the guys are genuinely affected every time someone drops out. It's like,
yeah,
no, like Cooper Hoffman at one point is just like, ah, like this is so messed up, yeah. you know, like, yeah. and they do things where like, they'll scream and they'll stop and they'll be like mad and they have to stop, grab each other and be like, don't stop. Like
yeah,
we have
yeah.
to, you know, we got to keep moving. but I found that to be really kind yeah. of emotionally compelling too, that like, yeah. that they're not even really like, for the most part, they're not even really interested in competing against each other.
Yeah.
And that's where like this Berkovich thing is really interesting. Cause a lot of these guys are trying to help each other. They're trying to keep each other alive. They're trying yeah. to keep each other. It's almost like us staying alive. It's like rather than us versus each other, it's us versus these guys with
yeah.
the guns.
Yeah.
It's us versus the major. It's us versus the military. It's us versus this yeah. system that forces us to do this. Yeah. And when Berkovich does this thing that makes it seem like he's coaxing this kid into mm-hmm. getting his ticket punched, because Berkovich keeps, you know, coaxing this kid into, like, he coaxes him into stopping and turning around and walking backwards and yeah. getting three warnings and getting shot. And then everyone's like, that's on you, man. You killed
yeah.
that kid.
Yeah.
Like you yeah. killed that kid. And he immediately is like, don't say that. Don't,
yeah.
I, no, yeah. I didn't. Don't say that. And again, I do think this is a really interesting thing for the movie to play with, but it's also yeah. like, I just think that the screenplay could do a better job of
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, fleshing. I think they could have treated the character differently because, it, as we said, like he's treated as the antagonist who's trying to use schemes to get people out.
And yeah, because I just didn't like him at that point.
Yeah, I didn't like him either. And I think, you know, if it was more of a mistake, if it was something that like he just like if he was a person who doesn't have a filter, who says too much to someone because he's goading this kid. Mm-hmm. He is trying to get him upset, which makes it seem like, oh, well, he meant to do that. He'd be fine. But if it was something that like, oh, you know, he doesn't have a filter and like he's saying things that are inappropriate, but he doesn't realize they're inappropriate. I think that might have been better to in the end, let us have a little bit more sympathy for him.
And it feels like that's where they wanted to land with the character that he's just like, I didn't mean to you know, but they don't. It just takes so long to get there. Like he, and I still am like, I get it. Like he's so like insecure and scared and upset that, and his defense mechanism is just to lash out and be mean.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, like you guys can't say that about me. And then, but then he starts threatening the other kids. He's like, I got plans for you. And I, you know, and it makes him seem like a villain.
Yeah.
And it seems very like Stephen King esque to have this like sort of disturbed villain character in there. It seems like a character that would be in like It or something like that. But I'm like in this movie, I think it would have been more interesting if at some point Bergovich had come to one of the other kids and been like, I really didn't mean to do that. Like, I, and he does, but he does it right before he dies.
Yeah,
he's like, he's like, I hope you guys know. I really didn't mean to do that, you know? And by then it's just sort of like, I don't believe him. Like I don't.
Right. Right.
And then when he does what he does, I'm like, oh, I guess maybe he was sincere in his, but it's all just so kind of shocking. But for a while, now, you know, we're into like mile 50, 70, 80. We're like down the road now. And for a while, Hank is like not doing well. Hank has his hand in his jacket. And I kept thinking like, is Hank like holding on to like a, I didn't know what he like, his hand is in his jacket. And I was like, did he? Because Hank's been talking about how like he can't feel parts of it, like he can't feel his legs and stuff. He's like, my legs are numb. I can't feel my legs. And his friends keep grabbing him and holding him up and just going like, just keep walking and just you'll get your feeling back. And then it literally just looks like his body's just shutting down.
Yeah.
But the way that Hank got his ticket really broke my heart.
Oh, like, it was brutal. Because he's a funny character, and like his character is not intentionally funny,
right?
But he plays it really funny, and like you really grow to like this character who's kind of like mean but ultimately nice, and like it was extremely heartbreaking to see this character have to go through this because he's always had a plan, and he's like, oh, I know exactly what I'm doing, and all this, and then he just can't. He tries to walk back, I think, right?
Well, what we find out a new rule, which is you're not allowed to charge the, to charge the Jeeps.
Yes.
So, I mean, obviously throughout the course of this competition, they've definitely had some people who like at a certain point of exhaustion or frustration, they try to like rush the Jeep and grab the guns from the soldiers and maybe turn the guns on the soldiers.
Yeah.
And you're not allowed to do that. And the punishment for doing that, if you do rush the Jeep, it's like, and they tell you, they're like, don't like stay back. Like you're not, but the punishment is they won't shoot you in the head. They'll shoot you in the gut and make you bleed out slowly.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, because you did that, we're not going to give you a merciful fast death. And so he kind of deliriously runs at the Jeep just saying like, I can't do it anymore. And they shoot him in the stomach. But the other kids can't go back and help him either. Like they can't, you know, one of them I think does go back and is like, why don't you finish him off? Like, come on, like, dude, you know, but that person's getting warning. So the other kids are yelling at him going like, just, you got to leave him.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking because as he's dying in the road, he's yelling after his friend saying, I did it wrong.
Yeah.
I did it all wrong. Like I did, you know, I messed it up. Like you know.
And he's the first one because they call themselves the Three Musketeers and there's four of them. Uh-huh. And he's the first one of the really close knit group that dies. And it really is pretty horrible. And then we find out after that he did have a wife.
Right.
Cause you know, he never said that he had a wife, but someone said that he did. And so they all decide that they're going to, you know, donate or do something.
They say, help. Whoever wins, give some money, send some money to his wife. And they all agree. And even the, even like the buff guy that like has been kind of quiet the whole time, he agrees. He's like, fine, I agree. They get everyone. Yeah. They're like, hey, everyone hear this. Like whoever wins, send money to Hank's wife. Because a lot of them, they've also talked about this too, that like if you had a girlfriend or whatever, or a boyfriend, it's smart to break up with that person before you go on the long walk. Like Cooper Hoffman's character talks about this. He talks about how he's like, I was seeing a girl, but I broke it off because I won the lottery. There's also an interesting thing about the lottery that they talk about where they're like, we all enter the lottery, but have you ever met anyone who doesn't enter? Like, it's presented to us like a choice. It's presented to us like something we volunteer for, but there really isn't an option to not throw your name into the lottery. Like, so no one really wants to get selected for this lottery because most people know that it's a death sentence.
I thought that was interesting. I also saw another take where it is very much like a lottery where so many people, like in our society today, so many people will buy lottery tickets and knowing that the chances of winning are astronomically low, and we still do it anyway. So it's kind of like people are in desperate times, and Ray even says this. He's like, they've put a gun to our head and they've shown us, you know, backed us into a corner and said, that's the only way out. And they point to a hole in the ground. And so we all have to go into it. So I thought that was a very interesting way to talk about, I mean, do they have a choice in the matter? They do, but they're really being forced into this choice. I thought that was a very interesting part.
We get more of an insight into the world of the movie too through Ray, because Ray is kind of quiet about what his plan. Yeah. They're all talking at one point about what their plans are if they win, what they would do with the money, and also there's this whole thing of like you get one wish, which is very like which is very like whimsical.
Yeah.
He won't say what his plan is. He's kind of like I don't want to talk about it. But we sort of get an insight into his worldview about the world that they live in. And how it's informed by his father, who was kind of a rebel. His dad was kind of a revolutionary who sort of secretly opposed the major and this this militaristic sort of governmental framework where his dad had like, you know, banned music and banned books and things like that.
Yeah.
And we get an idea that like the major sort of runs America in this world and has a very like authoritarian, totalitarian hold.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Hold
yeah,
on. He, yeah.
Yeah. He's And I don't know if he's the president. They never get into that, but I imagine that he is the authority figure like you're talking about.
He kind of seems like the end all be all.
Yeah. I did want to ask you this because they talk about the winner. The winner is supposed to get this huge amount of money, like this huge sum of money.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, I don't really think anyone actually wins. I don't think they actually give anyone any money. They ultimately just kill the person who wins. So that, because their whole goal is to, because he's like, every time we have this, our GDP goes up, you know, a certain amount or whatever. And
I know I was curious about that, but then I'm like, wouldn't the winner have to be like a public figure who,
and that's what I thought was interesting too, because everyone's like, well, have you ever met anyone? They don't ever talk about the winners. They just say the winners get a bunch of money.
Right.
And so
they don't even say how much.
Yeah. My thought is they don't actually give them anything.
I thought about that. I was curious about that. And the movie doesn't do quite, it doesn't really, which it doesn't need to, but it's sort of like, it just feels like, again, this movie has a tone to it that's just like bleak. That's just like, when it was over, I was like, wow, that was really depressing.
Yeah.
You know, there were just a lot of really emotional, sad moments.
Yeah.
But yeah, then, you know, so we're getting thinner and thinner. We're like, to like almost 200 miles that these guys have walked, and they're just so ragged. Yeah. And you know, at one point there's this guy, this one was so brutal, this guy who wanted to write a book, and early on he was walking around asking guys their experiences. Yeah. And then this guy, all of a sudden we just see this shot where he's got an ankle that is twisted and broken, and he's walking on basically like a stump of a foot that it's just like his bone is just dragging on the pavement. And he finally just has to give up because he can't walk on this stump anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's just brutal.
Yeah, yeah. That is brutal. That was really sad.
Yeah. But as it's interesting, as the group gets smaller, their camaraderie gets tighter because it starts off as just like the four musketeers. But then as it becomes like 10 people and then like 8 people and 7 people, those people start to get more like, I think they all just have more respect for each other of like, okay, it's just us left, you know?
Yeah.
And there is this kid that started out who was like the most fit. And there's this really interesting, ironic twist of fate that's happening to him. He gets really sick and he's just, he's like very visibly ill and kind of looks like he's dying. And as they're, well, first before that twist happens, one of the remaining three musketeers after Hank dies, there's a whole sequence where they're basically like holding him up. Ray and Peter are holding him up between them. And this scene was so brutal because he just talks to him and he just goes, "All right, guys, I think I'm done." Yeah. And they're like, no. And he's like, "Guys, like, it's gotta end at some point. Yeah. I think I'm done." And then he it's so sad. He goes, "Well, you guys promised me one thing." And they go, "What?" He goes, "Don't look, please don't look. Don't turn around." And it's so brutal that they have to promise him that they just let him go. Yeah. And then he just stands there and waits to get his ticket punched. And oh man. Yeah.
Yeah. A great performance by all. And that one, that one is really sad. I mean, they're all
his nose has been bleeding for like miles. His nose has been bleeding for like 50 miles. And he's like, he's just like very unwell. And it's, you know, it's like, you see this when you watch people go through marathons and the way that like the human body shuts down. Yeah. And it's like, these kids are walking like hundreds of miles without stopping and their body. I mean, they've all gone to the bathroom in their pants several times. Yeah. They're all walking around in like shoes that are falling apart. At some point, Cooper Hoffman's, the soles of his shoes just come, they're just gone. And so somebody's just like, "Hey, just take them off, man. Just get rid of them." And so he's just walking in socks and he's just, and his feet are just bloody, just, you know, and, you know, and eventually it's like five people left. And this kid who's the we talked about Berkovich at one point kills himself when they're all making the deal to give money to Hank's widow. Berkovich is like, "Hey, can I be a part of that deal? Like, will you guys let me in on?" Which I thought was kind of like sweet that he was like, "Is it okay if I'm part of the deal?" And they're like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Okay, thanks." And he's like, "I really didn't mean to kill that kid." And then he just goes and just kills himself, which is, you know. But I also liked the way this other kid does it, where there's a few different one person runs off the path, just goes, "I'm just gonna run for it," and just tries to make a sprint. That person goes, and the other person goes, basically does what Hank did but more successfully, just goes, "I'm just gonna make a last stand," and he rushes one of the jeeps and takes a gun and starts shooting,
and he kills a few of them.
And it's just sort of like a, "Hey, I'm going to go out swinging." And they do the same thing to him that they did to Hank. They shoot him in the stomach.
Well, he kills himself. So he's a Native American, which
they shoot him in the stomach first, but then he kind of looks at him and like defiantly, because he's already stolen a rifle. Yep. He's like, "You don't get to take me out like that."
Yeah.
And he, you know,
And that was pretty brutal too, but I liked that character. Cause a few of these tertiary characters are really hardened. Like, he was kind of a hard one. And then at the end, he really comes in and he really gets that camaraderie that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I thought his character was done especially well, because he was pretty hard the whole time. And then at the end, he really kind of gives in and you really like, "Oh man, like, oh, I like that guy now." Like,
well, and it's interesting how, as people, when people die earlier, like, this is another reason why I think this is a good metaphor for life, because when people die earlier, it's really like against their will. And it's like, really, it's almost always like from some like cruel twist of fate, you know, just like, "Oh, I got a Charlie horse in my leg and it won't go away." Yeah. Or like, "I wasn't able to pull my pants up fast enough when I was pooping," or, you know, and it's like, that's usually how we feel about people who die young. Is just like, "Oh man, like too young, like too early in the walk, like too early in the race." But as the race goes on, increasingly people start to sort of take their own fate into their own hands. Yeah. And you start to see more and more people kind of go out on their own terms, that like when they're ready to be done and they're like, I'm not going to walk anymore. It just kind of reminded me of like the way that some people can kind of like, you might be dying of an illness later in life and you can make the decision, "We're not going to keep fighting this as aggressively.
Right.
We're going to, you know, we're going to kind of, give me some morphine to make me comfortable, get my family over here and let's have some nice, you know, let's have a couple days where we all, you know," and it's like sort of taking your exit into your own hands and finding a way to exit the walk with dignity and being like, right. I'm gonna do this with my head held high, and I'm gonna, like, I'm not gonna let them take my dignity from me.
Yeah.
I walked 150 miles or 200 miles, yeah, and I'm proud of that. And like, they start saying that to each other too, like, hey man, you did a really good job.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, and it's just like, it's so emotional. They're like, I'm, yeah, so proud of you. Like, you worked really hard. Yeah. And
well, and speaking of the going out on their own terms, I think there's only three of them left, which is David Johnson and Cooper Hoffman, and then this other character, which I guess this is what you wanted to talk about, because he reveals he's been sick the whole time. Mm-hmm. He's a very fit one, and he reveals that he is actually the son of the major, and the major has many
illegitimate children,
and he is one of them, and he was hoping that the major would invite him in for tea, you know, I think is what he says.
And like, his wish was going to be like, can I please just like be, can I just like have you as a dad?
Yeah.
But I was more interested in what he's saying before this revelation, because right, what he says is, I'm the carrot. And yeah, they go, what do you mean? And he goes, or I'm the rabbit. He goes, I'm, yeah, the rabbit. And they go, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know, in like races, I think it's like dog races or horse, yeah, races, yeah, they have them chase a rabbit, but it doesn't matter how hard they run, they can't catch the rabbit.
Yeah.
And I thought what he was saying is that like the state always puts in like a ringer,
right,
into the, that they like, they put someone in who the rest of the people are supposed to be chasing, but there's no way that they can.
Yeah.
And that person always wins the, yeah, long walk, and that person like doesn't need to be, you know, like that it's all, yeah, just like a sham. And I thought that was a more interesting twist to be, yeah, like, I was supposed, but he's like, the cruel twist on me was that I wound up getting really sick and I wasn't supposed to get sick. He's, yeah, like, I'm supposed to be the person that you're all chasing, and it doesn't matter how hard you all push forward, you're not going to catch me. I'm just in better shape than all of you. But the, yeah, cruel twist to fate is I wound up getting like the flu. And, yeah, he's like, you know, he's like, I've never been sick in my life, and I have the flu, yeah, on the long walk. But I like that twist more than I'm the major son. I just think I'm the major son doesn't really do anything for me. It's just kind of like, okay, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I don't know. I like the twist more that it's like they're rigging the game. They're rigging, yeah, the race.
Yeah, that yeah, that is, that would have been more interesting, sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, what him being the major son does is it just makes the major really, really cruel.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah, it does. Yeah, because he treats him exactly the same, because he says, well, I'm not, you know, I'm gonna go out with my head held high, and you know, I'm not gonna get on my knees or anything. I'm gonna stand tall or whatever. So he does that, and the major treats him just like any of the other ones. They just kill him immediately.
Yeah, and I do like this, that he says to the boys, like, because he's been like competing with them the whole time, and he's kind of in the holdout, yeah, and he's just like, he's like, you guys are gonna make it, and he's like, and I'm gonna go out with my head held high, and he just like, yeah, stands there and like salutes, and then like stands at attention, yeah, and just waits, you know, and it's like, yeah, it's very powerful. But mm-hmm, we also found out at a certain point in a flashback that Cooper Hoffman's dad, yeah, was killed by the major.
Yeah.
And so Cooper Hoffman does eventually reveal to Pete, he's like, listen, I'm going to tell you what my plan is, just because I don't think I'm going to make it. And, yeah, he's like, and my plan was, my wish was going to be, he's like, I was going to wish for a gun so I could shoot, yeah, the major. He's like, I was going to, yeah, kill the major, you know? And Pete's like, I don't think that you would have been able to get away with that. And he's like, well, yeah, I'm going to try, you know, he's like, but I don't think I'm going to make it anyway, you know? But there is this scene before the ending where they're walking, they keep, yeah, calling Ray the hometown boy because they're in his, yeah, home state.
Yeah.
And he's the only one whose family is close enough to come and watch him,
yeah,
participating. And while they're in like the home stretch, like the last probably 50 miles of the, yeah, walk, and he's got no shoes on, his mom shows up to watch him, and his mom, played by Judy Greer.
Yeah.
And he, as he's walking past her, Pete's trying to tell him like, hey, you gotta like keep your eyes forward, and like, yeah, don't, this is going to be really hard for you, but like, just keep moving.
Yeah.
And he walks past her, and as she's almost, yeah, gone. And then he turns around and runs back to her,
yeah,
and starts, yeah, but as he's running toward her, she freaks out because, yeah, he's not allowed to step off the road, and she's standing on the sidewalk. And she's going like, no, don't. And she, and he's saying, I'm so sorry. I messed up. I shouldn't have done this. Yeah. I'm so sorry. And she can see that he doesn't have his shoes on. And she can see that, but she's just like screaming, like, please get back on the road, please. You know?
Yeah.
And once again, he's got a gun pointed at his head and she's like, and it is like dangerously close to him being murdered in front of his mom.
Yeah.
And
Judy Greer just really goes for it in this movie. And it was, you can tell how scared she is and how terrifying this is for her. And this was a really, really well done scene.
Cause this is a scene that made me tear up. Like I definitely was like,
yeah. Yeah. But they ultimately are the last two. David Johnson and Cooper Hoffman are the last two, and they're just walking. And this part, David Johnson says, he said earlier in the film, when I'm done, I'm just going to sit down and let him take me. And that's just all I'm going to do. And so he sits down and he's like, I'm done. Congratulations, man. Like, you take it. Like, you need to be the one. Like, find, because he's always telling, he's been trying to tell Cooper Hoffman, like, don't do this. Don't kill the major. Like, find the good in life and live on how your dad would want you to be, right? Which was such a great message. So he lays down, but then Cooper Hoffman picks him up and says, look, just walk with me for a few more miles. Like, just be my brother right now and let's just walk a few more miles. So David Johnson says, okay. And like, he lifts him up and he kind of pats him on the back and
Cooper Hoffman stops.
And David Johnson doesn't realize, and then he gets his ticket punched and he gets shot in the gut first. And then the major comes over and kills Cooper Hoffman.
Yeah.
And this is the part that made me cry. Like, cause David Johnson is just crying so hard. Like, he's watching his friend who he's just spent the last three or four days, five, whatever days is, together going through all this horrible stuff. And so the major kills Cooper Hoffman, and then we're trying to figure out what's going to happen. And David Johnson says, major comes up and says, all right, what's your wish? And he says, I want a gun. He says, we'll get you one. He says, no, I want that gun from the walk. So they give him the gun and you're thinking, what the heck is, I was just like, is he really going to do this? Cause he just spent the whole movie telling Cooper Hoffman not to do this.
Well, yeah, and we also found out that earlier that he finally revealed the story of how he got his scar, and we kind of get an insight into his worldview, which is like he's lived a whole life of just like being passed around from home to home, intense abuse from one of his uncles that he lived with that scarred his face and cut his face up, and that he's just learned to view life as a series of like really beautiful moments when he can. And so even on this walk, he's always pointing out, like, look at the sunset, look at, like, and this is some of that stuff that, like, I appreciate that it's in this movie. I think it's important because, again, if this is a metaphor for life,
right?
It's like, even though life is kind of brutal and hard and confusing and unforgiving, you've got to try to find the moments that make it worth it.
Yeah.
And I felt like the way that J.T. Molnar sort of wrote this into the screenplay was a little just kind of basic and heavy-handed. It was just sort of like, because like then Cooper Hoffman says back to him, like, you know what, there are good moments, and the fact that you and I met and we were friends, that's worth it. And it's just a little like close to sappy, but it still works for me. It's just something that I feel like it could have been handled a little maybe more like, I don't know, I keep coming back to the word like poetic or sophisticated or something. It works well enough. But we do have this we're like, right, is he going to now, in honor of his dead friend, shoot Mark Hamill? And he does.
he points it at him, and Mark Hamill's like, put your guns down. Like, you're not going to do this, kid. Like, you've got a whole bunch of money waiting for you. And they have this exchange, but then ultimately he shoots him. He shoots Mark Hamill, you see him fall, and then he just drops the gun and he walks into the distance. There's nobody around, because at this last mile, there's a ton of people there. There's just a bunch of people that are, cheering him on or whatever. And all those people are gone, and David Johnson just keeps walking.
Yeah.
And then that's the end of the movie. And I mean, it, you know, it is kind of suggesting that, I mean, he did kill the, he did kill.
Do you feel like he's dead? Do you feel like,
I do feel like he got shot right after that.
Yeah.
Or he never got the chance to shoot him. And that was like his dream of whatever.
It does feel like that, right? But it's like, also, it feels like this movie could be suggesting that that's literally what happened. And in that case, I'm going like, well, I have questions. Like, I'm confused.
And I did. It is really interesting that, because he's always been the light. David Johnson has always been the light, the positive one. And then in this last moment, he switches and everything. He's kind of on the, he's on the opposite side, you know, of the screen now, that's kind of saying that he is, switch sides. He's kind of in the dark now, right? And he chooses to go into the dark, which is a very grim ending to this movie, right? Like, he is,
that's what I mean, is there's something about the ending that's just like not quite fully satisfying. It feels like there's, it feels like as the movie's going along, there's just like more to this world and the society than what we know, and there's more to the walk than what we know, and there's more, you know, like this idea of like, are they actually giving money to the person who wins, this idea of like them putting their thumb on the scale by putting a rabbit in the race, that's you know, like these different, that it's, that I'm like, I kind of want an ending that has a little bit more of like a strong revelation, but the ending in some ways felt as exhausted as the characters. Like the ending just kind of felt like, oh no, I'm tired. Who cares? The end, you know, it just sort of felt like, instead of like delivering something that really hits with like a big heavy punch, it just was like, eh, that's the end, whatever, he shoots the major and he walks away. It's like, and then it's like, and you can think of it, whatever. It just kind of felt like the movie itself got kind of like tired, you know. And I don't know.
No, I agree. And it's kind of like, it's a very bleak ending, which it just makes you feel like, oh man, there's like no hope in this world, right? And it's consistent with the movie, but I didn't necessarily want a happy ending. And I don't know if this would be better, but I almost would have liked to have seen David Johnson not shoot the general, but like say something to him that basically means like, I'm going to stand up to you and I'm going to try and take this system down, something. And I mean, that's a horrible way for me to, you know, if he would have just,
or if he had like vocalized a wish that is like doable.
Yeah. But it
somehow, because earlier David Johnson had said that his wish was going to be to change the rules to allow two winners. And they were like, you can't make a wish that changes the rules. And he's like, well, I'm going to try. And it's like, I wondered if the screenplay could have paid that off in a better way, where it's like, instead of wishing for two winners, maybe he wishes for something that's like, I'm not changing the rules of the society, but I'm opening up. I'm going to inspire anybody listening and I don't know what that wish is, but it's like, I just wanted something that gives the movie a little bit more of like a, especially with a movie that's so bleak and so heavy, some kind of hope, because what we get is a feeling of like, I don't think that actually happened. I think he probably just got killed when he pointed that gun at the major. And if he did shoot the major, I think they shot him right after. And if they didn't, I don't know how. Does that mean he's the new major now? Is this the Santa Claus rules where if you kill the major, you're the major?
And
you know, I don't know.
I agree. It was like, oh man, is this the best ending for this movie? But it's not bad. It's definitely not. It's a very interesting take. It is different from the book. In the book, Ray does win, and David Johnson's character dies. He's actually in third place. And the really buff kid just like dies from exhaustion. And then Ray doesn't even realize, he just keeps walking. So it's, I don't know. It's an interesting ending. I think they did a great job in this movie overall, but I do wonder, I would have kind of liked to have seen a little bit of hope or a little bit of, adversity, being an adversary to the major.
But maybe, you know, if the movie is a metaphor for life, maybe the ultimate message is like, nobody actually like, as the walk goes on, as it gets longer and longer, and as your body gets worn down, you have fewer and fewer friends and fewer allies, and nobody actually does get to escape it.
And, you know, which I totally agree. And if it's a metaphor for war, I mean, the war is over, but you come back, you're not the same person. I mean, you've lost all your friends. you come back just really dark, depressing, in a dark, depressing way. Not that you can't get out of it, but that's, yeah, it's a good movie. Really good.
Let's get into scores. So yeah. We score movies out of 10 on a scale of 10, 10 being the best, and we give a technical rating for the craft of the film, just how well was it technically constructed. We give a score for the ending, how well did they stick the landing. We just talked a good deal about the ending. We give a score for rewatchability. We give a score for cultural significance and impact, and we give a score for our subjective feeling about the movie. So, Kramer, what is your technical rating for The Long Walk?
My technical rating is a 7.5. I think they did a great job on this. It was simple. It was done really, really well. Cinematography was good. The directing was good. The acting was really good. Everybody did a really, really good job. I think some of the things that we talked about with the script, maybe a little bit on the nose, sometimes just a little bit. And that ending as well just makes me think, okay, is this... It just leaves me wanting a little bit more. So I kind of docked it points for that.
Yeah, I gave it an 8 technically, because I think, you know, just for what they were trying to do, it's pretty well executed. Yeah. And like I said, the moments that they need me to feel a certain way, I was feeling it.
Yeah.
And I mean, the movie is bleak, it's heavy, but I don't think it shies away from that. It lets you know what it is early on, and it kind of keeps you in that space, but it manages to do a lot with a really simple concept, which I found pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And I dock at the points for, some of the things in the screenplay that I think were set up and not paid off in a way that I think was maybe the best usage of those setups. And I don't know who's to blame for that, if it's Stephen King or JT Molnar or a combination of both. And then that ending, I just am not sure about, which is the next score. So what is your score for the ending?
The ending, I gave a 7. I think it does it, like they decided to go in a certain direction and they went for it, which I think is very, very admirable. Like I think it was earned, the ending that they got. So I don't feel like I can give it less than that, but I also don't feel I can give more than that, because I do kind of feel a little bit empty with it. So
yeah, I gave the ending a 6.5 because I just felt like that's the thing that's keeping me from really, really loving this movie, is just the fact that it makes it hard for me to recommend the movie really highly to people. Cause I'm just like, well, there's not really much. Like if I were to recommend it, I'd go, I think it's very well done and I think it's very effective, but it is just, it's bleak and there's not really much to take away from the ending of it. It's kind of like, you know, I think about another Stephen King adaptation, The Shawshank Redemption, and what a bleak film that is. And just what a terrible kind of saga through Andy Dufresne's life they take you on. And in the original edit of that film, it was left more ambiguous, where it wasn't shown that Morgan Freeman ever makes it down to Zihuatanejo to see his friend. He has the speech about, like, I hope I see my friend. I hope. And then the movie just ended. But they decided to do, they did this reshoot where they have him see Tim Robbins on that beach. And to me, that's the thing that makes that movie one of, like, an all-time classic.
Oh, yeah.
Is just the fact that they land it so satisfying in a place where, like, a big theme of that movie, similar to The Long Walk, is one character trying to convince another character that hope is not a bad thing to have.
Yep.
As bad as Andy's life is, he's always trying to convince Red that that it's okay to have hope. And that, you know, and Red's like, not in here, man. You got to grow up. Like, you got to understand that, like, this is your life. Shawshank is your life, and you need to ditch hope as quickly as possible. And at the end of the movie, it's like, after everything that they go through, here they both are on a beach in Mexico, and they're about to start a whole new life. And it's like that theme of, like, even through the worst imaginable circumstances, hope is a valuable thing to hang on to.
Yeah.
And this movie doesn't give you that. This movie just sort of is like, that's it. That's the walk. And it's like, ugh. And so I think it could be a really great film if they found an ending that just hits a little harder somehow.
Yeah.
Rewatchability.
Rewatchability, I gave a 6.5. Because it is done really well, but it's brutal. It's bleak. It's as we have talked about. So it is going to be. It's. I mean, an hour and 45 minutes or something. So it's not too long. But yeah, it's it would be a harder one to watch, but I would definitely watch it again.
I could see myself coming back to this. I could I probably in my life, will I watch it two more times? Who knows? Maybe one more time, maybe two more times max. I gave it a 6 because it is well done. And if someone had never seen it before and was curious about it, I would definitely sit and watch it with them. Yeah. But I don't know. It's kind of one of those, like The Shawshank Redemption, again, is one of the most rewatchable movies of all time. Yeah. And this is a movie that feels, it's like in that similar palette of Stephen King stories.
Right.
And it just doesn't quite hit as hard for me. Some of those moments do hit hard. And that's why I would probably rewatch it, is for some of those emotional moments in the middle of the film.
Yeah.
How about cultural impact and significance?
Cultural impact, I gave a 7. It's doing well, and I think this will have an impact. I don't know how big, but I think it's getting really good reviews from critics and audiences. So I think it will kind of prove to be a pretty influential movie down the line.
I had this at a 5. I'm going to bump it up to a 6 because I do think that I was like, is this going to like have the staying power of like Stand By Me or other kind of like Stephen King classics? And I'm like, it could be a movie that further down the line people are going to go like, that movie didn't quite get the flowers it deserved at the time, but there's a lot there to really appreciate. And I could see it getting a little bit of a cult status down the line. How about your subjective score?
My subjective score is an 8. I think just the performances and the fact that it had affected me emotionally so much, like at the ending, I was really sad, and it was really, every time somebody did get their ticket, it was done very well, and it did affect me. So I felt like, and this is better than a lot of the movies that, I mean, it could have just been a standard movie that they just came out with, but I think it was elevated above that. So
I agree. I gave it a 7.5. I just, for the most part, I really enjoyed the process of watching the film, bleak and heavy as it was. I was impressed with what they were able to do with such a simple concept. And how they were able to make kind of the same event happening over and over again keep feeling new and heavy and hard in a different way. Yeah. And I do like a simple metaphor sometimes. I like something that just sort of simple and elegant. And as heavy as it was, I mostly enjoyed watching it. So go see this in theaters if you haven't already. And just be prepared that it doesn't shy away from the violence and that it's heavy and bleak, but let us know if you've already seen it, what you thought in the comments, like, share, comment, subscribe, all of that good stuff. And we're talking about Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another next. So check that one out if you want to watch along with the show.
Which actually we might post this after we post that, but
that's true. Yeah. Maybe I got it in the wrong order.
That's all right. This is a makeup and
we'll
get back on track, but glad we were able to talk about this. I really wanted to talk about this one. So
yeah. Good point that this might happen. Who knows what order we're releasing these in. Yeah. All right, everybody. Either way, we'll see you on the next one.
See you on the next one.